Yeah, I don't know what it's about. I've watched this movie twice now. It's beautiful. I like it. I just have no idea why we were there, what we were doing. But I think I like it anyway. It's like Good Tron. Good Tron was the number one, but sorry, Blade Runner 2049 was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hello, my name's Sean Collier. I'm here with two of the other employees at this sprawling, dilapidated English manor estate who don't have time for this girl's shit. It's Camille Adams.
Good day.
And Robin Hitchcock.
Hello.
There were other staff members who just have occasionally looked exasperated and then walked into the background.
There goes Maitland again. Yeah.
The Chalk Garden, a unanimous 71. That is just our second agreement in all of these episodes. 95s across the board for Get Out, 71s across the board for The Chalk Garden. We came really close with Ghostbusters. You both gave it a 90 and I gave it an 89.
Mm.
But, you know, we're not going to agree that often. But we agree that The Chalk Garden is good.
We're not going to agree today.
Why? Even the scant praise I gave in my introduction is more than you have to say for Blade Runner 2049. We got into this a little bit, but we got into this in a talking as if the audience already knows what we're talking about way. What is everybody's history with Blade Runner? Camila?
As I mentioned last time, is that the only time I saw this was to review it for my other podcast, Down to Watch, when I did a special segment or a special series on just Ryan Gosling movies. And yeah, that's the only time I watched that movie.
How about the original?
There have been so many failed attempts at me watching that movie. I think in college was the first time I tried to watch it because I was in art school and in the film program and everyone blah, blah. And you know, it just never spoke to me. And I don't think I've ever gotten all the way through it.
Exact same. I was in a film class. They were like, now we're beginning Blade Runner. And it was one of those classes that starts at like 6 p.m. It's like an awkward, you're a little sleepy, like you're not like in night mode. So I watched it for like 45 minutes and I was like, I don't have it. I'll catch up to this. Right. Didn't. At some point in the next 10 years, I did. And I was like, that was good. I don't know if I get what. I eventually had a viewing of Blade Runner projected onto a wall during the COVID improvised drive-in that really landed. And I was like, nah, I feel it now. It only took like 3.5 viewings.
Okay.
Still, I don't know. Like, I haven't chosen to go back to it since. So I wouldn't call myself a fan.
No, absolutely not.
Robin has a complicated journey.
I was talking with my friend Caitlin, who loves the original Blade Runner. Yeah. And I was talking to her about it. And I was like, listen, at the end of the day, I don't dislike that movie. It is not a bad movie. Right. I just think it is an exceptionally okay movie that people are constantly jerking off over. And so there's that feature to it. And then the second one is I saw the original version and I was like, it's just okay. People are like, well, you watched the wrong version. So I watched the director's cut. And I was like, yeah, I honestly think I like the original version better. And they're like, well, you're an idiot. And then 10 years later, they were like, and also you watched the wrong version. And I genuinely cannot tell you if I've seen the final cut or not. Colin thinks we did watch it together.
It depends on when you watched it.
So I don't know if I also think I'm so angry about it that I probably did give it that third try. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, are you fucking kidding me?
I don't get this. I don't.
So much of it is that when it came out in 1982, it looked like nothing else.
Right.
Sure.
Right. Yeah.
I'm not arguing with the look at all.
No.
I think the look is, and even of this, even of this film, the look is great. It's just this we did say last time. It's so slow and so dire.
It seems like a rip-roaring thrill ride compared to 2049.
Yeah. But both films, it's like we're being very serious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
About our fun robot time. Like, not everything has to be frivolous. But, and I get that this is kind of the serious counterpoint to Star Wars in a lot of ways.
Okay.
But it's what there's no joy. There's no scrap of joy. Anyway.
Denis Villeneuve makes Nolan seem like he has a sense of humor.
Yeah.
Which is the meanest thing I've ever said about anyone.
I gave it an 8 when I saw it in 2049. I gave it an 8 when I saw it in 2017. That's coming down today. Partially because big screen definitely would help.
So yeah, I have not seen this on the big screen. I will never see this on the big screen unless I get punished in some way. Mm-hmm. So like that standard caveat. But like you mentioned Tron. I kept thinking about Tron Ares throughout this movie. A movie that everyone, with the exception of Mads Lerner Seitz, agreed was garbage.
Yeah.
Pretty poop from a butt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Why in 2017 was everyone so hypnotized by the beauty of this film that they think it's genuinely good?
Well, not everyone in that... Not a lot of people saw it,
which we'll get to. But like, I went and even since then, I went and read the popular reviews on Letterboxd, and most of them are in the 5 stars, 4 stars territory. Mm-hmm. And one person I follow like was like, "This movie is perfect visually, morally." I was like,
"Morally."
Morally?
Yes. My brain broke a little bit. Anyway, I read a ton of reviews that were like, this story means so much to me.
Mm. I think it's the inverse of that. This is both pretentious and hand wavy. Some movies play in your emotional key.
Yeah.
You know, this is like when I sat down and watched The Wild Robot and was crying by the end. Oh. I don't know why.
Or me and Petite Mama.
Yeah. Like sometimes you're like, this plucked a guitar string in my brain. And I think Blade Runner and 2049 do that for a lot of people.
Men.
But not for a lot of men, but not for everybody.
I think you're being totally generous when you put it that way, because I just kind of feel like there's a majority of people that fall under the category of, I'm supposed to love this movie.
Mm.
This movie is supposed to be like, you know, everybody else or whatever. It's from this director. It's from this time. It's got, they're doing this type of thing on the film. And so I just feel like there's people, and this is somebody who went to film school. and studied with a lot of those people that just feel like they need to put it on a pedestal.
I always I'm so reluctant to buy into that argument, and yet you are compelling right now.
And I'm not trying to say that nobody genuinely loves this movie, but I feel there's a majority of people that just, you know.
That's how I feel about the French New Wave. I mean, if you were there at the time, I'm sure it was mind blowing. But when people today are like, "I get so much out of Breathless," I'm like, "You're full of shit." Go watch Jackass.
I watched Cleo from 5 to 7 for Not Too Late Tuesday and loved it.
Well, I bet based on nothing, I bet Agnes Varda is actually the best one.
Oh yeah, based on her being a woman.
Just letting
you
that
have
sit.
To be the best.
Yeah, yeah. Just letting that sit. Yeah.
I'm the best one.
That was one of the best things in this movie.
I love that.
Listen, there are things I do enjoy about this film. Okay. It is fucking gorgeous. Yes, Camila.
Before we get any deeper, and this is something that I've been meaning to talk about for like 2 months now, we had, I need to shout out one of our listeners who sent us a lovely little Instagram message back in July. And I don't know if I'm not going to call him by name because who knows if that's not what he wants to do. But he just says, "Hi, I just finished the Avengers episode. I want to say how much I appreciate this podcast. Thank you for many laughs, great recommendations, and just being an awesome podcast hang."
That's so nice.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. You know who you are.
We like hanging out with you too.
All right. So I just wanted to put a little bit of appreciation to one of our listeners.
And I hate that right now.
I hate to be the, we do this for you, the fans, but... Because the number one reason
for me,
we number one reason we do this is because we like sitting around and talking about movies with each other. But the fact that anybody listens is clearly reason number two.
Right.
Like this isn't doing anything, you know, logistically in our lives.
Right.
Like we get feedback like that and we like doing it. So yes. Thank
so
you.
Yeah, everybody, please, you know, feel free if to send us all of your glowing comments.
Mm-hmm.
Anything you want to just want to say hi. We're here for it.
It's a real boost when we have rough draws.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, and while the train is on the tracks, Camila, tell me what this movie is about, because again, I don't really know.
I don't know if I'm going to help you.
Jared Leto's making Somebody Needs More.
I went back and listened to the Down to Watch episode about this, and Camila was adamant that she will never watch this film again.
I'm so upset.
Thank you for forgetting you had said that.
Disagreed.
All right. Whenever somebody tell me.
Go.
Kay is a Blade Runner whose job is to hunt down older model replicants and aggressively stare into the neon-lit void. After retiring a replicant on a worm farm, he spots a dead flower, gets confused, and takes pictures. Turns out there's a box of human bones buried down there. Well, actually bones of a replicant who somehow died during childbirth, which is impossible, right? His boss is like, this breaks society, go fix it. The date 6-10-21 is carved in the tree and Kay is obsessed. It is his totally fake programmed childhood memories. He hid a wooden toy horse carved with the exact same date. His tracks down an orphanage, realizes a whole year of records is missing, and oh snap, this is the exact orphanage from his memory. He walks to the furnace, pulls out the wooden horse right where he left it. His hologram girlfriend starts gassing him up. Babe, you're not a toaster. You're the chosen one. You were born. He takes his little memory to a doctor in a glass bubble to get it authenticated, and she's like, yeah, bro, this memory is 100% real. With his brand new identity crisis, he goes to a red desert beehive casino and finds Deckard. Deckard has been alone for all these years and isn't pumped about a visitor. Turns out the special replicant was Deckard's kid, not Kay. The memory belonged to Deckard's daughter, who is the memory doctor. As Kay except he's not the chosen one, bad replicants bust in, kidnap Kay and Deckard. Kay rescues Deckard from the bad guys and will officially report that he's dead. He bleeds out in the snow while Deckard goes to meet his daughter.
Wow.
10 seconds over, but I think...
And I'm left out so much.
I could not have been done.
I think I have a sense of it. Kind of.
Left out the Jared Leto of it all and the whole...
Oh, yeah, that sense. Whole thing.
He's like barely in it, like, touch wood, like, that's great. But what is he even doing there?
No idea.
He wants them to be able to give birth?
Yes.
Because that will allow him to get more into the world?
I think so. I assume that he is the one who came up with... He created this? The whole thing?
That doesn't
He's
make
Wallace.
Sense.
He's Wallace. Yeah. This is his stuff, right? This is,
I don't know.
Or maybe, yeah, see, that's what I'm saying. Like, I assume that he is Wallace. And I know, like, dude.
He is Wallace.
Dude's,
yes.
Okay, so dude's girlfriend is part of the Wallace Corporation.
Yeah.
So he, at very least, he created the hologram girlfriends.
And that's yes. How they lead the trailer.
Every civilization was built off the back of a disposable workforce. But I can only make so many.
There is an order to things. That's what we do here. We keep order. The world is built on a wall that separates kind. Tell either side there's no wall, you bought a war.
I had your job once. I was good at it.
I know.
The key to the future is finally unearthed.
Bring it to me.
They know you're here.
I always told you, you're special.
Which totally implies that this is like a knockdown, drag-out action
yeah.
movie
yeah.
fight between Ryan mm-hmm. Gosling and Jared Leto, which has nothing to do with what we
Not
get.
At all.
They
movie.
Share like, what, 5 minutes of screen time?
Barely. I don't even think that. Yeah. That scene is mostly between Jared Leto and Harrison Ford. Right?
No, I mean like when he goes to the Wallace, to Jared's lair.
Yeah.
And he like interacts with Love. I believe.
Yeah.
Who's Love?
The great character. The good part of this movie.
Right. Though I am the
Sylvia
I'm
Hook's
the best
character.
One.
Yeah. Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah. I am the best. I think what people, you know, trying to read the mind of these letterbox people, I feel like what people were connecting with, and when I say people, I still mean men, they really found it powerful that he wasn't, that we're led to believe that he was the miracle baby and that he's just another guy. Because they are all coming to terms with the fact that they are not the main character in life.
Hold on.
Yeah.
I'm going to move the microphone away from my face.
Yes.
So you liked it here, but when Star Wars did it 2 years ago, it was an insult to your existence.
I had the same thought. I also went back to listen to the You Can't Handle the Truth episode, guest starring Chris Prexta.
Aaron Kleiber and Chris Prexta, yes, who were the voices when we got to The Last Jedi, who said, why is it different? Right. And Messi Marino, to be fair. Yes. I was the only one saying, I don't care that it's different.
So yes. Yeah. Yes. Because it was a boy this time, Sean.
I don't understand. I'm not fully grasping what a replicant is. If it's not
an AI android.
Okay, but they bleed, they breathe, they eat, they drink.
They give birth.
Right.
A very convincing AI android person.
Yeah. I would say more of a cybernetic organism.
A cybernetic organism.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah.
Sure. Because trying to track this onto like current feelings about AI just is confusing and upsetting.
It's confusing and upsetting, but I do also think it is meaningful because the thing that troubles me, there's so many things that trouble me, but ultimately, I think the thing that upsets me the most in this whole movie is that Kay has a hologram girlfriend who is a chatbot, basically. The part where when she's first introduced and she's dressed as a 50s housewife and then instantly transforms into like pajama core, sexy. I very much was like, oh, this is why men use AI. Yeah. This is the reason, like men AI instead of Google because AI compliments you for Googling something. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you know that. Yeah, only recently found this out. It's always like, what a great question. Your dick is big.
Wow.
Yeah. So I hate AI, as we've discussed many times. Yeah. And the idea that even a synthetic person would be like, I need a more synthetic girlfriend. I can't.
Right.
I can't. Yeah. Right. Get a robot girlfriend because I need my girlfriend to be less human than me to be happy with her is disgusting and is also how actual humans operate. Mm-hmm. So it makes me feel like throwing up.
Oh, God.
The other thing that really troubles me, this is sort of an offshoot, but like the replicants are like, they won't enslave us if they know that we could give birth. And I'm like, I have really bad news about the history of humanity.
Right, yeah. I would beg you all to just kind of look back. Just go ahead and, you know, check some history books.
Right. And like, there's like two black people in this whole movie.
Yeah.
One of them is Academy Award nominee Barkhad Abdi, which is nice. Mm-hmm. It was nice to see him. But like, what is he there for?
What was he? Who was he?
He was, he shows up with the horse and is like, identify the source of this horse.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Wow. What a waste. Yeah. What a waste.
Right. But like, also that's, I think Loki, the only thing I've seen him in other than Captain Phillips. So like good
that
they hired him.
Right.
No, actually and the cast.
The other black guy is named Mr. Cotton and is running a slavery ring.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, it just makes
which
me mad.
Also, you know, sorry, Lenny. What, I forget, was her real name? Morgan from Walking Dead.
His real name. Actor Lenny James, known by his real name Morgan from Walking Dead.
Yeah. It's true. But again, like, I love Lenny. And I'm always happy to see him working. But fuck. what a
It is a kind of loaded cast. Forgot that Robin Wright was in it and this whole movie would collapse without her.
Yeah.
She is really selling it.
I love that scene where she hits on him.
Yeah. Dude,
like every female being that comes through is always trying to shoot their shot with him.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
every female being that he interacts with in this thing, even love.
And yeah.
That, just like, I'm going to kill you, but I'm going to tongue kiss you first.
I guess Mackenzie Davis wasn't as much of a thing then, but I was really glad to see her. I think she's great. I think she's great in everything.
Was that the sex worker?
Yes. Yeah. Who is used as a puppet and her character's name is Mariette.
No.
Yes. This movie is bad. This movie's bad.
Mariette.
Mariette, our puppet.
I kind of like the sex scene, though.
No.
Not because I'm...
You're not like, titillated
no,
by it.
No, not because I'm like, ooh, hot, because, like, it's just very...
Her did it better.
Yeah.
But everything with the AI girlfriend, if I want to have a good faith approach and be like, maybe they knew how fucked up this is. I'm like, yeah, well, her did it better and Ex Machina did it better.
Yeah, that's true. Ex
Machina, such a good one.
Yeah.
So wait, back to why you like the sex scene.
Sorry.
The way it is mostly to do with the way they're flowing in and out of one another.
Okay.
And I think that Ryan is really playing this like three intention thing right there where like he's a little bit horned up. He doesn't know how to feel about this and he's trying to be cool.
Yeah.
And he's doing all of that at the same time. And like watching that like very human acting moment in contrast of this like weird two people in one body creation. Yeah. I just was like I don't know if Denis Villeneuve or anyone else knows what we're supposed to be exploring here, but this scene is doing it.
Yeah. Ryan was very good with that. There's so much great micro facial expressions.
He's not allowed to make a real facial expression.
Yeah, so. but he does it so well that, and especially like the scene when he's when they do the whole like baseline test for him. So after he's like, oh, his mind has been blown about like I could possibly be human, and we see like the close up of him like gulping and all that stuff. And it's he was really good.
He's a good actor.
He's great.
And I love this is the last thing, and then we'll finally do the facts. I love Dave Bautista in this.
Yeah.
I love his ridiculously tiny glasses.
He's the only person that could pull those off.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen him wear those before.
Yeah. And the story starts weird because I can't rightfully describe to you why this was happening, but I was in college and Dave Bautista was like answering questions from students. Like, I think it was marketing classes or advertising classes, and somehow that had melded with WWE was coming to town, and they sent someone to make an appearance, and one thing led to another, and I'm in a big classroom with Dave Bautista, who's answering questions, mostly about wrestling. But the one thing, somebody asked him if he was looking to get into movies.
Huh.
And he was like at first very diplomatic. And
then
like,
he was like, I'm going to be the greatest wrestling actor of all time.
No, he was so humble about it. He was like, well, I've been approached for a few things. I'm not sure. And then he started to nerd out a little bit about how jealous he was of Triple H for being in Blade 3.
Oh, wow.
Because that was the kind, he said, I love science fiction. That's the kind of movie I would love to do. Cut to, he's in Blade Runner. He's Drax.
Right.
He's like become a specialist in exactly what he wanted to do.
I mean, he's almost definitely, I'm marking this down, going to be the first wrestling actor to get an Oscar nomination.
Yeah, probably. I mean,
for anything. I feel like before he dies, he'll get an Oscar nomination.
Yeah. I mean, if Cena had the right comedic part.
Right. I love Cena. Don't get me wrong.
But yeah, he's the best.
Yeah.
Batista's the best by far. Blade Runner 2049. It came out not long ago. Well, it's almost 10 years ago now. Released October 6th, 2017, the 25th number one movie of that year. It won that weekend with $32.7 million.
Seems like not a lot.
It's not a lot, but it still easily beat The Mountain Between Us. With
Kate Winslet, my God,
and Idris Elba.
Oh, I saw that.
I think I saw that too.
I'm pretty sure no one who saw that knows that they saw it.
Correct.
Mountain Between Us second with $10.5 million. By the way, this was the ninth consecutive weekend that an R-rated film was the nomia.
Wow.
Annabelle Creation, Hitman's Bodyguard, a lot of it. Kingsman: The Golden Circle, Blade Runner 2049. That had not happened in 30 years.
Damn.
The previous was a combined 9-week run for Stakeout and Fatal Attraction.
Wow. Stakeout's rated R?
Apparently.
Okay.
Yeah.
For stalking?
Yeah.
I think it's because we got so lax with
what makes
an R-rated movie.
I think that's a good point.
Just a 1-week number one movie in America lost to Happy Death Day, which I'll go ahead and say is a better movie.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
The following weekend, $92 million domestic, which is not what they were looking
for. No. How much did this movie cost? It looks expensive.
Right. It cost $150 million. The like weird magical break-even number after the marketing and everything was somewhere between $350 and $400 global, and it didn't come close.
Did they
close.
Really think it was going to make that?
Probably.
Some people did.
Okay.
Ridley Scott said it would have made it.
Long.
Ridley Scott said it would have done much better if it was shorter.
Yeah.
Like he both cited the thing that people always cite about fewer screenings during the day, and was like, yeah, this is just too long and slow. They should have cut half an hour out of it.
Right.
Which they should have.
He's right.
But that's the thing. Like, Blade Runner, for the reputation of Blade Runner, that was film
long
school.
And slow.
No, I mean, it was for film school people.
Oh,
it's
Sarah.
Not Star Wars. It's not even Tron.
Mm. Yeah, no.
It's not like there were legions of people with their Blade Runner lunchboxes who are going to come and do their nostalgia thing with this movie. I am surprised that with the hype and with the rapturous reaction it got, it didn't make $100 million.
Yeah, me too.
That's 34th for 2017, below the likes of Daddy's Home 2, Annabelle Creation, and 50 Shades Darker. Those are movies, those are sequels that we wanted more than we wanted. Expensive baubles.
Okay, so this was Roger Deakins' first win. A cinematographer, he was like the Diane Warren of cinematographers. Mm-hmm. I believe he's since won a second Oscar.
I think that's right.
This is well earned.
And this also won visual effects, yes?
Yes.
Okay, so one cinematography and visual effects, and it was nominated for several more.
Nominated for three more.
Sound, and editing?
Sound, and production design.
Oh, actually, that's a deserved nomination.
Production design. I wrote down in my notes this won for production design, right? And it didn't. It lost to Shape of Water, which
I'll allow it,
but only because I like Shape of Water much more than I like this
movie.
That's
also where I'm at.
This probably
is better. If I were an Academy voter, I, with all love and respect to Roger Deakins, would not have voted for this in any category because I find it repugnant.
Cinematography beat Darkest Hour for some reason, Dunkirk, Mudbound, and Shape of Water. We would have loved Mudbound to win.
I know. Mudbound, man, Netflix. That movie should be talked about.
It's so good. Yes. Is it Netflix's best awardsy movie? That or Power of the Dog, probably.
I think I like Mudbound better.
I think Mudbound was my number one that year,
that sounds
or
right.
At least like top three. It's really good, and
Mary J. Blige is so good in that movie. Carey Mulligan is so good in that movie.
I wish
that guy who turned out to be a predator is so good in that movie.
Which one?
The black guy,
Jason Mitchell.
Yeah,
I wish
Eazy-E and
yeah.
I wish it would have won an Oscar so that there's a better chance that people remember Mudbound.
Yeah.
As much as I hate to take it away from Roger Deakins, visual effects is a much more clear, like, yep, good choice. It was
1917. He won for 1917.
Mm. It beat Guardians 2, Kong Skull Island, The Last Jedi, and War for the Planet of the Apes. Like, maybe Last Jedi can win that, but I'm glad.
Mm, Kong Skull Island should have won that.
It was good.
Yeah.
It's big fucking ants. Nominated for production design, lost to Shape of Water, lost sound editing and sound mixing, both to Dunkirk. Correct. And it won Cinematography at the Critics' Choice Awards.
Do you think you voted for it?
I'll tell you if I voted for it.
While you're looking that up, I'm going to say that one time I was hanging out with a friend of mine, and he was like, I've only bought CGI in two movies, Forrest Gump and Kong Skull Island. I can always tell, except for in those two. Shaking hands with JFK and a monkey eating a helicopter.
Mudbound was my number one for best picture. So let me see where I put this on my ballot. I had it second for cinematography behind Dunkirk. I had it first for production design. So at least I'm consistent.
A Blade Runner?
Yeah. It was nominated for editing, wasn't on my ballot. It was nominated for costume design, wasn't on my ballot because... What? Because his collar was really big once?
I gotta say, first of all, that jacket rules. Hmm. Everything Sylvia Hux wears rules. The transparent yellow jacket that the AI girlfriend wears rules.
Yeah.
There are some notable costumes. Harrison Ford's costumes, I think that they made this comment on the old You Can't Handle the Truth episode. It looks like he just showed up on set. And they were like, we don't have time. Just get in front of the camera. Hit your marks.
Which totally, for the character.
Right.
And the circumstances, yeah.
It was also hilarious looking at contemporaneous reviews being like, Harrison Ford's actually trying. And like watching it now, like post-shrinking, knowing what it looks like when he's actually trying as an old man. It's like, oh no, he is not trying.
Right now, he absolutely...
Cash in a check.
Yeah. Huh.
I am embarrassed to say that my visual effects vote was Beauty and the Beast.
What the hell, Sean?
That was pretty good. You know what? That's when they rolled out switching from the little balls to the dust.
What?
the little balls to
I
the
don't
dust.
Know what you're talking. I do know what you mean by little balls. I do not know what you mean by the dust.
Disney invented like glitter, basically, that takes over for the little green balls that you wear on your face.
Okay.
And the expressions, while Beauty and the Beast has some of the same visual effects problems as every Disney live action remake, that's the one where the expressions start moving like reality because they invented the little dust.
So you were like, good for you on this innovation.
That's probably why I voted for it. And I had Blade Runner.
I feel
second.
Like my memory of the Beast's face is that it looked upsetting.
Mm. I had it third for score. Yeah.
The score for Blade Runner?
Yeah.
Wah!
Yeah, those noises. No, they did more. In fact, they fired, this is not in my, I didn't bother writing this. They got rid of excellent score guy, Johan Johansson, rest in peace, because he was going to do his thing. And they were like, no, we want it to sound like Vangelis.
Mm.
Hans Zimmer, get your acolytes to make it sound like
Vangelis. Right, yes. Hans Zimmer, hire your people.
Right.
Take credit for their work.
It's what he does. Let's see. Hey, why, Tony? We don't always do this, but it's very, very pointed right now. Why, Tony? The new Amazon series Blade Runner 2099 debuts on Prime this November, starring Michelle Yeoh and Hunter Schafer, executive produced by Ridley Scott.
Both of those women have better things to be doing with
I
their
know!
Lives.
Michelle!
Hunter!
Mm-hmm. It's Ridley Scott's been involved the whole way. He said this has been in the works forever, blah, 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 blah.
Whatever.
Yeah. Also, there's a new Ridley Scott movie out today. But
yeah,
we'll get to it.
And I invoked the name of Jared Leto.
Right,
foolishly.
That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's all Robin's fault.
I know.
Speaking of which, hey, you know how this movie could have been much better? The Jared Leto role was at least mentally intended for David Bowie.
Yeah.
Oh, but then he was dead.
Then he was dead.
I would have made it. I would have given him 20 points.
I still,
added 20 points to my score.
I'm glad I didn't watch David Bowie cold-bloodedly murder someone who was just born in order to remind you all that women aren't people.
Mm. Oh, come on now, Robin. If David Bowie did it, that wouldn't have been your
No. I don't know if I'm all the way with you on there, but I am on, if that's David Bowie in that room, it makes more narrative sense.
Right.
Because now putting David Bowie there, like, puts a spotlight on, this isn't the actual plot.
Yeah.
This is some weird side shit that's going
that's
on
a really
with David
good point.
Bowie.
Yeah.
Whereas, also, he wouldn't have had to wear stupid contacts. He could have just used his magical, natural weird eyes.
Mm-hmm. Hey, allegedly this film does not settle the debate on whether or not Deckard is a replicant. I thought it did.
I thought it
I
did.
I thought it did. Was it? Wait.
Is it the whole point? Yeah, oh my God, replicants can reproduce.
Right.
Apparently that still counts if it's a human man and a replicant lady.
This is dumb.
But like, I remember thinking, because that was, until this movie came out, that was a key film nerd debate.
Yeah.
Is Deckard a replicant or not in the original Blade Runner? I saw this movie and thought, oh, that settles it. He is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But allegedly they've officially been like, we didn't do anything that makes you know for sure.
I'm rolling my ass.
He is, right?
Yes.
He definitely is. Which is
everything is more satisfying and makes more sense if he is.
Therefore,
he is.
Which is what Ridley Scott says Harrison Ford maintains he's not.
Okay,
oh,
Harrison Ford.
Wait, yeah. I
go crash another plane.
Fuse.
Don't really, Scott, I'm sorry. Our octogenarians are precious
you know
right
what?
Now.
It's been a week.
I swear.
It's been
Robin?
A week, Robin.
I'm sorry. I take it back.
I walked away from this thinking that Deckard was human and... I wasn't under the assumption, and again, I didn't care about this previous debate. I just thought that, I didn't think that two replicants could reproduce. I thought it had to be, one of them had to be human, and one of them was a replicant. That was the thing. But I also haven't thought a lot about this.
Mm. Well.
I mean...
allegedly, it's not resolved. So
because we're getting into like... Never mind. Fuck it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's sort of where I'm at. Yep. I'm like, I don't care. I do not care enough.
The introductory scene with Kay and Batista on the farm, that was the original opening scene for the first Blade Runner movie.
Oh, and that's
cool. And then they got away from it.
Oh.
They brought it back to do it here. And yeah, that worked.
Yeah,
I got no problems with the opening of this movie.
I will say, I did put this movie on and fall asleep shortly after, like, that scene ended. And while he was talking to Robin Wright, I fell asleep. And then I put the movie on again and fell asleep another 12 minutes later. And then I put the movie on again and I was really sleepy. And I was like, just make it until Harrison Ford shows up. But that takes a really long time.
It's like an hour and 20 before Harrison shows up. And I intentionally spaced it out 3 days. I know I'm not gonna make it this in one sitting. So I was like, it was like 3 days it took me to watch this movie this time.
The Blade Runner bros are really mad at us right now. Yeah, I kind of watched it over the course of a day. You know, when you like sit down for 40 minutes and then you catch another 20 later, and I know I should give myself over to the experience.
If there's one thing Blade Runner bros love to do, it's tell you you watched a movie.
Yeah. Speaking of which, there are at least 7 different versions of the original Blade Runner. The definitive one is the final cut. That came out in 2007. Okay. So in your mind, if you're older than 23... when you're having this, I'm doing it again, you've seen the final cut.
Yeah, I think Colin and I watched it together. So yeah, I did. I can't believe I gave this movie so many fucking chances.
For all of those versions, if you're thinking of exploring, really the only two worth paying attention to are the original release, to see what people saw and see what the studio... As much as, you know, I think the narration that I've seen in the original release is bad, I do hate when things are given weird happy endings.
I don't think it's, I think you could be smart enough to know that's not a happy ending is my number one defense of the original. And my second defense is the narration is helpful. Honestly, the movie is weird, right? The narration is helpful information. B, it is a film noir.
Yeah.
So that is stylistically appropriate. And thirdly, when you aren't as awestruck by the visuals because you've seen so many things imitate them. Without the narration, there's a lot of long shots of a city.
Yeah, that's true.
The narration papers over some of that.
And look, for a movie that the three of us all agree is kind of boring, maybe the version where the studio was like, let's make this less boring, is worth looking at.
Yeah.
But certainly all of the ones in between are not. The final cut is the only one. Ridley Scott did not do the director's cut. Ridley Scott only did the final cut.
Even though he is the director, the director's cut is someone else's work.
Yes, yes.
I will say that if you want to watch Blade Runner, watch the final cut, because then no one can tell you have to watch it again.
That's true.
So.
And a final note, the you know the scene in Ready Player One, which we have covered on the show, and I enjoy. You know the scene where they go into The Shining?
Yes.
That's there because they couldn't get the rights to go into Blade Runner.
Cool.
That was written as them going into Blade Runner.
Huh.
Blade Runner 2049 was in production and Warner Brothers was all touchy about it.
Sure.
So they said no. And dumb Warner Brothers, but thanks.
Yeah.
Like really, on a week where we're going to talk more about Warner Brothers being dumb, what a dumb move to not like remind people that your property is cool before your new movie comes out. But thanks, because man, do I love them walking into my favorite movie in Ready Player One.
Right.
Right.
So...
Ready Player One came out after Blade Runner, and I only know that because in You Can't Handle the Truth, they're like, we're so excited for Ready Player One.
However it shook out, it could only have helped, and Warner Brothers was done.
I agree.
We should transition to Gosling talk in a minute, because that's the place of joy.
Yes.
I will just conclude, in the end, I kind of like this movie in the way that sometimes I go to YouTube and put on...
ambient noise.
Slowcore noir vibes 10-hour loop.
Yeah.
Like, I do think it looks so good. It sounds so good. It's beautiful. The actors in it are acting well.
Yes.
That is one thing it has up on Tron.
Yes. I just...
When we say Tron, we really mean like Tron Ares, just to be clear.
Right.
I'm not, no shade to the original.
The original isn't thrilling.
Either. I like it.
When it comes to the story of Blade Runner, I don't care enough to get angry. If I cared more, I probably would be where Robin is. But I'm just watching it. I'm like, yes, I guess stuff's happening. Allegedly, there's narrative happening here, but it's not Landon. But hey, pretty.
Right, yeah.
And honestly, it's so pretty that I'm still above water on this movie.
Yeah. Same.
Now, for a contrasting opinion, here's Robin Hitchcock.
Am I rating it now?
No, let's summarize and rate so we can move on to Gosling talk and then our other segments. So with that summary given, 62
Okay. I feel like I've said what I need to say. I felt a lot of pressure going into this episode. I was like, I really want to be articulate about why I hate this because I know so many people love it. Mm-hmm. And I find it like genuinely offensive. Mm. It is great to look at. And they were trying. I don't actually think this movie was made with an evil heart. Mm-hmm. I think this movie was made by a man who doesn't really think women are people.
Right.
Just the baseline way that many men don't think women are people. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to give it a very generous 26 points.
26?
Yes.
The inverse of
damn. Life. Ouch. Okay, so yes, I am still I'm of the same mindset as Sean with it was very pretty. All of the actors did their job very well. I am, I'm a little biased because it's watching Ryan Gosling do Ryan sure. Gosling things. Mm-hmm. For, 2.5 hours. But I also, y'all also know how I feel about 2.5 hour long movies.
You do.
And it's, so it's really tough. And it is a very difficult plot to follow. And I think that's my biggest problem with it. We're not really saying a lot. And so, damn. 65.
Camila's the highest.
I know, mm-hmm. Which I did not.
You know. I was thinking about this when I was watching it. You love beautiful, colorful movies.
Yeah.
You have a weakness for
I do.
A vibrant yes. colorscape.
I do.
And listen, they're great. You should get those hue lights on your TV.
That mm-hmm. I know. Yes. I really do. Yeah. I want that so bad.
51 is the score. This is a good movie by that much.
Yeah.
Let's go to the bingo card and then back to the special Gosling segment. Do we have anything?
Yes. Product placement?
Yes.
Character stares deeply into a mirror?
No.
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 There were no mirrors?
No. Listen, I was
Anna
laser.
Anna de Armas never does?
No, she doesn't have a reflection, right?
I'm sure she does.
I was but laser no focused mirror. On this. Enhance image trick all over the place.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, bingo.
Ooh, that's a bingo.
Oh, wow.
Oh, great. Exploding. Let's go through because there might be multiple bingos.
Yeah.
Exploding car crash.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, and then finally, I am going to make an argument for unrealistic disguise when they make the bad Sean Young.
No.
No? Okay. I'm like, that doesn't look like Sean Young.
But didn't we already? I already have unrealistic disguise crossed off.
Yeah, me too.
For what?
I don't remember for what, but.
I'll take your word for it. Also, bingo.
Ooh, that's a bingo.
All right,
great.
Movie draft.
Yay.
Well, when are we going to do it?
After spooky season.
Okay, great. Excellent.
It's been years. It's been years since we've done a movie draft.
What are we going to do now that we don't use Twitter anymore?
We will use Instagram has a poll function.
Yes.
Oh, in stories.
Yes.
Yeah. But how long? But a story is only 24 hours.
That's
really,
okay.
We're really going to have to
push it.
Listen.
That's fine. We'll figure it out.
Our most dedicated Instagram followers.
Nomi X.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. And I didn't say Letterboxd because this blows my mind. Top 50 films with the most fans.
See, this is what I'm talking about.
This is purely a ranking of which films appear most often in people's four.
Literally what needs to be done to convince women or people that women are... women are people! Women are people!
Blade Runner 2049 is 95th overall.
Leave me alone.
Two spaces ahead of Blade Runner.
Go away. I don't like this shot.
Only two spaces behind The Matrix, which I'm not a Matrix stan, but it feels so much more like a thing that might be in your four. You're telling me that of all the movies that have ever existed, you're like, if I only get to pick four, Blade Runner 2049 is one. I'll give you the original because of some of these film nerd reasons we're talking about.
Right.
This sequel is in your four.
I want an age demographic of Letterboxd users. Like,
that's actually, Letterboxd is really popular with Gen Z.
Okay.
So this might be people who saw it when they were 14 and never seen anything that looked like it.
Exactly. That makes sense.
It's an odd top 10. The 10 is Greta Gerwig's Little Women. 9 is Good Will Hunting.
What?
8 is Whiplash.
What?
7 is Fight Club. 6
that doesn't surprise me.
6 is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Also doesn't surprise me.
5 is The Perks of Being a Wallflower. 4 is 10 Things I Hate About You.
Okay.
3 is... What Ryan Gosling movie do you think is number 3?
Barbie. La La Land.
La La Land is number 3.
We'll put a pin in it.
Number two is Dead Poets Society.
This is all over the place.
Yeah.
And Robin, you've already come close enough to exploding today.
Oh, God.
I feel like even revealing it.
Just, you have to do it. Just rip the Band-Aid
Remember
off.
When we did this a couple of weeks ago with the top most viewed movies, and you were outraged at the number one?
I do, but I don't remember what
it's
I was
It's the outraged. Same number one.
I repressed it because I was so upset.
Interstellar.
Yeah.
Interstellar is number one.
Interstellar
People
is the
fucking
most.
Love that movie.
I still haven't watched that fucking movie.
I mean, I love that movie. I'm
of course you do, Sean.
Yeah.
It's about sad space people.
It's about spad space. That was the Letterboxd.
Letterboxd makes us unable to speak because we're so upset.
We want to talk about
The Gosling of it all.
And then we're really... How are we doing on time?
We got about
20 minutes.
Yeah, okay, right, we got time.
We're going to make this... Yes.
We're going to have to lightning round you can under
Seriously,
the truth.
Do go back and listen to the Ryan Gosling series on Down to Watch.
Yes, it can be found wherever you find your podcast. So at the end of each episode, I would read from this book that I found, and I want to say it was from Cards Unlimited here in Pittsburgh. 100 Reasons to Love Ryan Gosling. Yes, this is a thing. Somebody wrote it, published it, and sold it, and I bought it. So we're going to pick up where I left off last time there. Number 81. He wants to date us. Well, sort of. I mean, he's basically said as much because despite a string of famous hashtag lucky bitch girlfriends, this Rye boy is skeptical about high profile relationships. This was before his Eva. This was printed before Eva. Show business is the bad guy. When both people are in show business, it's too much show business. It takes all of the light so nothing else can grow, says Ryan. Watch out, E-Men. There's a swarm of non-famous girl next doors just waiting to grow on Rye.
I'm glad he worked it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And number 82, he gives his dog a mohawk for the summer.
Oh.
I've seen photos of this. George needs to keep cool. I can totally sympathize. It must be hard not to get hot and bothered when you're being carried around in Ryan Gosling's Herculean arms.
Oh.
Thus concludes readings from the Book of Gosling.
Tell us briefly your love. How did his star grow so bright in your sky?
Murder by Numbers.
Really?
I think was the first
That's
one
the
I
first
saw.
Thing I saw him in, and I was like, who is this guy?
Yes.
I saw him on the Mickey Mouse Club.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of remember
but
that
I
too.
Did, but when I saw Murder by Numbers, I wasn't like, this guy from the Mickey Mouse Club. I was like, who is this guy?
Yeah, and it was the scene where he's in the car and trying to get that girl to come hop in the car with him, and he's like, and he's doing the thing, and I was like, immediately, like, okay, I'm taking notice.
Okay.
Who is this gem? So that's where it all began.
And we briefly talked off mic. What's your holy trinity of Gosling films?
All right.
What are your
Are we
going to
do bottom three also?
I don't think
Oh, I don't okay. have a Damn. Bottom three.
Okay. All right. Top three, as we all know, Lars and the Real Girl. And Murder by Numbers. And then The Nice Guys. Like we had said Barbie, earlier, but I had totally forgotten about how funny The Nice Guys is. So good.
Honorable mention, Crazy Stupid Love. I kind of have a soft spot for that movie. And he's really funny in it.
He is really funny in it. It's like if I could, that movie feels like it's three parts. And
yeah.
Like,
his is the best part.
Yes.
But Barbie, Drive, and... I think Project Hail Mary now.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay, my number one with a bullet is Barbie. Best performance he's ever given. He should have won that Oscar.
He should have.
Number two, I'm going to go with La La Land.
It's a good movie.
That's in my bottom.
Here's the thing that I loved in La La Land is what a sad fucking sack he is. I think he understood the assignment in a way that not everybody else making that movie did, including the person who won an Oscar for it.
But if you showed someone the scene where he is forced to play Flock of Seagulls and she's dancing to it, now it deserves all the accolades.
Yes, I don't think I'm glad La La Land didn't win Best Picture. I don't think it is an all-timer movie, but I do think it is a good movie, and I think that Ryan Gosling is genuinely great in it. And then my third is also Nice Guys.
Honorable
mention for Half Nelson.
Same. I was just about to say that. Honorable mention. It's so fucking sad.
It's an incredibly sad movie.
But it's phenomenal.
He was also nominated for that. Well-deserved.
He is good in boring movie First Man. First Man is in Camila's bottom three.
Yes.
It is a sad space movie that's also history. So
wait, what's the other third in your bottom three? We got
to
know.
Song to Song.
Oh, I've never actually seen that.
It's fucking terrible.
Yeah.
We're going, this is on me, but we're still going to lightning round. You can handle the truth. Camila, kick it off.
I watched Shell.
What's that?
With Kate Hudson and...
Oh, right.
The comedic substance, I guess.
Yeah.
It's bad.
Yeah.
There is no substance. so just stay away from it. It's boring. Bad. But that's it.
Robin?
Well, I just want to, because we have limited time, I'm like, Sean, you want to have an on-air orgasm about Camp Miasma?
I'm saving it. So do yours first.
I just take a moment, and I know we talked about this last week. Go see Coyote versus Acme. Mm-hmm. It is so delightful. I had high expectations and they were exceeded.
Yeah.
It is so much fun. And also it is a miracle that we get to watch it. So please don't take that miracle for granted. Get your butt out to the theater.
And I didn't realize this until I was talking about it on the radio this morning. This is the good Looney Tunes movie. There's not another one. They haven't, there's never been, it's not like the Muppets or Mickey Mouse or any other of the iconic properties where you're like, these three movies are good.
Yeah.
It's, shut up about Space Jam. We all love Space Jam. That doesn't mean it's good. It's not.
I watched Space Jam with the kids I babysat for. Therefore, Space Jam is for children.
Right. Right. This is the good Looney Tunes movie. We finally have it. Please go see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like legit got choked up at one point.
I know.
It's just, and it's very funny. And just go see it. Go see it. All right. Can't my asthma.
Have you seen anything else?
No. I was on vacation.
Oh, that's right. I'm going to climb up the ladder of the five new movies, six new movies, the five new movies I've seen. Starting at the bottom with Insidious, Out of the Further. We're still doing this.
Out of the Further.
Yeah.
It's no good.
The Out of the Further tour.
It's boring. It's just straight up boring. They go in. Oh, there's a spooky thing. You can bring the spooky things back from the place. You got to do the thing. You can replace every word in that movie with you got to shake the magic snow globe and everything will be okay. Like, it really feels out of time. It really feels like, yes, 10, 15 years ago, this was kind of the vibe in mainstream horror. Have you seen Backrooms, Obsession, Sinners, Nosferatu, Weapons, and everything else we've done over the past 5 years where it's like, we fucking changed, bro.
Yeah.
Like, the entire language of this changed, and you're just trying to do the old shit again.
That's
no good. Did not like The Dog Stars by...
Ridley Scott.
He's got a... It's... Who wants to hang out in the world we narrowly missed where COVID killed pretty much everybody?
No. Oh.
They talk about it like it's COVID, only now there's only, you know, a handful of people left on the planet, and they all hate each other and are trying to kill each other, and they're all sad and getting ready to off themselves at all times.
And there's tattooed hooligans.
Sounds horrible.
That barely factor in.
Okay. I just remember them from the trailer.
Yeah, if you watch the trailer, you might mistake that there's going to be action in this. There's going to be people wandering around and repairing planes. And a few scenes where Josh Brolin shoots people with sniper rifles.
No thanks.
Margaret Qualley is good. She can't not be. same rating, but thumbs up for Jason Statham in Mutiny. It's so dumb.
Ship.
It's so dumb. Yes, this is Ship from the makers of Plane. And... It's so dumb. The only reason I know this isn't written by AI is because AI wouldn't have the creativity to do every cliche. There's no reason. Like, yeah, his mentor gets killed and he has daddy issues, so he's mad about it. That gives him no motivation to go on a ship and start shooting people, but he sure does. I saw this late at a drive-in, and boy, is it perfect for that.
Do you think he's ever going to try again? Like, is he ever going to... Does he just fully understand his lane and is happy in his lane? Does.
There's
going to
be a Beekeeper 2 in 2007.
So, right.
Or 2027. Yeah. Does that answer your question?
So it does. Understands his lane. Not by...
But, like, is there going to be, like, 70-year-old Jason Statham... I mean, he's already in his 60s, right?
I think so.
Yeah. Anyway, is he going to, like, do a grandpa role and get an Oscar nomination?
Well, here's the thing, though.
I don't actually think he's good. Like, he's very good at this. But if you watch him act, like, it's not skillful in any way.
Well, he's, like, he's Guy Ritchie. Like, that's, like, that's where he is. And I think he does have good comedy. Like,
Yeah, he has some timing.
Yeah. He's 59.
Okay.
Yeah, how about that? Not a good movie, but I did enjoy it. Good movie, but I didn't enjoy it is Tony.
I don't have any interest in Tony. I'm sure I will watch it, but like I couldn't get my butt to the theater for it.
The cast is good. Antonio Banderas is very good. It's, you know, like it's just a movie about a sad, smart asshole who follows a girl to a vacation town because he's trying to get laid and ends up working in a kitchen. It's a normal, like, very male-centric coming-of-age fantasy that happens to be about Anthony Bourdain in a highly fictionalized way. And so it's like, it looks good. Mm. The cast is good. Dominic, I don't mean to disparage one-year CMU student Dominic Sessa. He's very good. It's just...
Oh, did he not graduate? He was like, I'm in Hollywood now. Bye!
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah. Good for him. Like, yeah. What are you paying them for? You're already doing
all
it.
All right. An education.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of hope that movie fades from the consciousness because, yeah. Does that get us there? Yes. Teenage Sex and Death at Camp Miasma. Instant 5 stars.
Yeah.
It, explicitly for me.
Yes.
And horror-obsessed lesbians, which I guess I'm close enough. I was like,
what this really is for is the alternate reality where Sean is trans and is named like Siobhan Goyer.
Yes, 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 yes. I have... I think Jane Schoenbrunn's films have gotten like a star better every time. Mm. Like, we're all going to the World's Fair. I was like, interesting ideas. Really excited to see what you do, even though mm-hmm. this didn't quite get there. And I saw the TV Glow was like, this is way closer. I think you're still not quite, give it one more swing. And this is the one that worked because it's, I keep unironically saying a pure hearted celebration of what cinema can be, because that's kind of what it is. It's about the ways that young people, particularly young weirdos broadly, queer specifically, attach to the VHS tape that was in their room and form a relationship with it and explore that relationship. And it does that thing I love where at a certain point the movie's like, you know how you might wonder what's real and what's not? Stop wondering that.
Yeah.
It's all, it all is and is, it isn't. Don't worry about it. That's no longer the point. Gillian Anderson is so fucking good. Hannah Einbinder is really good. I love the setting. I love the, you know, the playing with the horror tropes, but that's almost secondary. It just, it hit me emotionally and intellectually and creatively. And what's that Letterboxd review you hated about
morally
it hit me on every level. And it's not going to be for everyone. And Robin, I know you liked it, but less.
Yeah, this is a movie where I was like, oh, this is for horror movie people and lesbians, and I am neither of those things. And my like actual critical knock on it is that I think that a lot of people criticized I Saw the TV Glow for being a little bit too opaque, pink opaque. And I didn't find that to be the case. And I feel like the director overcorrected and everything is just a little bit too obvious in Camp Miasma. Like, I did not need them to say Norma Desmond one time, much less 10 times, for example. I didn't, like, we get it. Sex is candy. Like, calm down about the candy. The needle drop didn't work for me.
Oh, I love the needle drop so much.
It did. I rolled my eyes, and then it just kept going on.
A deeply unexpected song plays during the killing spree, and it's either going to make you go, "This is the best thing I've ever seen," or
And I was like, this is not a movie that I want to discourage anyone from seeing. And I do want to say it's Mubi, which means if you don't see it in the theaters, you may never see it ever again.
Right.
Unless you subscribe to Mubi, which is something no one does. Yeah. So go see it if you're interested in it. But also, if you've only heard it's the best movie you've ever seen in your whole life, let me be someone to say it's good.
No, if you're that trans version of me that Robin just described, how close are you to that bullseye? If you're really close, it might be the best movie you've ever seen.
Right.
If you're far away, it might be three stars out of five.
And it's no judge. That's exactly what I gave it. And no judgment. This is not like Obsession where I'm like, you're wrong. This is something where I'm like, this just wasn't for me. Also, I will say, Gillian Anderson sounds so much like Dolly Parton. Like, she clearly was using Dolly Parton as her like accent model. And so I watched it the day before Dolly Parton died. I imagine if you go see it now, that might make a new wrinkle to the experience.
She's good with accents.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I loved it, and it's going to be very high on my list. And that I just got to be me.
Yeah.
What can you do?
I truly was like, I'm so happy for Sean.
It's... I could go on, but I'm the one who set the hard limit. So let's draw a movie. programming note, we're going to do this, and then we're going to do Spooky Season, which is always three episodes, and I guess then we're going to have a movie draft a little bit later on. But this is just a draw, and that draw lands on Bad Girls from 1994. What's Bad Girls?
That was Uma the Cowboy? No, is that cowboy movie?
There's no way this is a number one movie in America.
This seems fake.
It's a cowgirl movie with a...
It's not Uma. It's Madeline Stowe, Mary Stuart Masterson, Andy McDowell, and Drew Barrymore.
Oh, I've seen that movie.
There's no way that's a number one movie in
Double
America.
Double check.
Ugh, it's like got a really bad rating.
Andy McDowell, future Faxy, Andy McDowell became the first actress in cinema history to star in two back-to-back Nomias, as she starred in both Four Weddings and a Funeral and Bad Girls.
Huh.
Yeah. It was a number one movie. Well, let me double check Box Office Mojo, because that does seem really screwy. It's only about $5 million. Yeah, there it is. It beat the seventh weekend of Four Weddings and a Funeral by about $700,000.
I mean, it's not free anywhere, but it's available.
You can rent it?
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, no, I'm thrilled to watch Drew Barrymore in a
female-centric Western.
Yeah.
Great. I am thrilled. I'm just shocked that this is on our list. Who's director Jonathan Kaplan? Mm-hmm. He did The Accused.
Hmm.
Huh. Sounds great to me.
Okay.
The rest of the room?
Bad Girls.
Broke Down Palace.
It's when I saw that and I thought, I don't have to watch Bad Moms, do I? No, it's not Bad Moms. It's Bad Girls, which I probably also prefer to having landed on Bad Boys. Or Bad Grandpa.
No, I draw the line at Bad
Grandpa. Bad Lieutenant. Let's keep going.
Not a number one movie in America. I am delighted to watch Bad Girls, Blade Runner 2049, October 8th of 2017. It was the number one movie in America. What was the number one song in America?
Taylor Swift.
No.
Drake.
No.
Kendrick Lamar.
No. This
Despacito.
No, this was certainly one of the biggest artists around then. I would say that momentum has not continued quite as...
Ed Sheeran?
No. I would say that she has since been eclipsed by others.
Demi Lovato?
This is both an apology and a clue. It's weird because that's always the narrative, and I don't like that that's always the narrative, but it kind of is always the narrative.
So it's like a young woman...
That there's ever only one of this type of performer on top.
Female rapper.
Yes.
Cardi B?
Yeah.
I don't know any Cardi B songs.
The main one with a song title that you don't remember because it doesn't have anything to do with the lyrics.
Yeah, don't know.
Bodak Yellow.
Oh, yeah. Never was going to get there.
Nope. No. Never, ever, ever.
I prefer... I like it like that.
Yeah.
And Best Life from that album. Mm. But when that came out, I was like, I'm obsessed with this person.
Yeah.
And since then, I haven't necessarily been.
Well, now she's schlepping Old Navy.
She's an Old Navy commercial?
Yeah. So wait, is Doechii the current only female rapper?
Yeah, I'd say okay. So. And it was Megan Thee Stallion in between.
Okay. Let's have more than one, people.
Yeah, no, it'd be cool.
Bad Girls.
Bad Girls.